Dear ones, you have been working so hard to get to this week. Are you feeling nervous? Excited? Cautious? Curious? Us too. If you are here for the first time this morning, this congregation has been in a very productive 3-year interim ministry period and is engaged in a search process for a new minister. Or ministers. This has resulted in us being invited here and for all of us to consider whether we are the right match for the ministry that is being called forth from us in a world that is so broken and so beautiful. UU's Society of Schenectady, your ministerial search committee is awesome. They have done their due diligence. They met us at the airport. They interviewed and they pre-candidated and essentially worked their you-know-whats off to get to this week. We are both honored and humbled that they chose us to be your candidates for co-ministry. The ways they articulated what they saw in us was very moving. They shared what they know that UUSS needs based on listening to you. It was interesting and informative, intriguing and inspiring. And these 7 people seem to think there is some powerful shared ministry for us to do together. No matter how the vote turns out next week, they and their close friends and family members deserve praise and thanks and probably a long vacation to someplace tropical next winter. This is us on pre-candidating weekend. It was 9 degrees. Yeah. We're pretty sure 9 is a shoe size, not a temperature. Yeah. And very seriously, your trust in them has been well placed, truly.
When we read your congregational profile on the Unitarian Universalist Association's Transitions website, yours stood out. We read about 20-ish records, and yours was maybe one of 3 that was funny. It was so refreshing.
Yes.
Yes. Now, some of you may have read parts of your record months ago, but here's more or less what your record said you were looking for.
After listening to many members through our survey and cottage meetings, the list of qualities we seek in a minister read like a wish list to Santa from a child who is convinced they've been very, very good this year. So good, in fact, that they think they're the best child in the world. But we're not like that naive kid who expects to find everything they want under the tree. We are a realistic, understanding, and forgiving bunch. So even though we have been very, very good, and for the record, we are the best church in the world, we know we're not going to get everything on our list.
We seek a minister who possesses empathy, integrity, confidence, and good self-esteem. A sense of humor would be helpful, too, especially as you read down the rest of our pared-down list.
We seek a minister who is comfortable in the pulpit and who can deliver effective sermons that apply UU values to everyday issues and problems. We seek a spiritual leader who is centered, knows themselves, and yet is still searching for the way to be better, a more fulfilled self.
As we transition to policy-based governance, we seek a minister who has organizational, administrative, and interpersonal skills that will help the church run well, who is comfortable as head of staff and will encourage staff, ministry teams, lay leaders, and the congregation at large to work together effectively.
We seek a minister who will foster spiritual enrichment for all members across the spectrum of beliefs. We seek a minister who is a facilitator and can find new ways to foster community here.
We also seek a minister who will help us develop a stronger connection with the wider world, in denominational life, as well as the community outside our walls.
We seek a leader who will guide and encourage us toward our most promising future. We have made great strides during our interim period and are looking for a minister who can help us continue the great sense of energy and excitement we have fostered as we strive to realize our full potential. We realize there's no way all of this will fit into one sleigh, minister. Our dreams are big, but our expectations are grounded in reality. So as long as we are all agreed that that is reality, we are here to be with you this week. And our theme today is perfectly imperfect. Good thing. Perfectly imperfect life in the arena. And here's why we say good thing. Brian Andreas, an artist in Oregon, deciding everything is falling into place perfectly as long as you don't get too picky about what you mean by place or perfectly. Yes. Over the next week together, we will be observing one another's words, actions, and gifts. We will be having unconscious responses and gut feelings about one another. Most of us have been carefully taught to judge and critique, to be right, and to do right, whatever that means for us in the cultures in which we are raised and in which we live. Some of us might even have a tendency towards wanting everything to be perfect.
When I was young, I was quite certain that my father could fix anything. His father had built a workbench that was in our garage. I loved that workbench, the smell of the wood and oil. There were tools that hung on hooks or fit into little drawers, and there were jars of nails and screws in dozens of different sizes, ready for when they were needed. There were bottles of glue and a vise on the corner of the bench that would hold whatever had come apart until the glue had dried. I would stand and watch as Dad tapped tiny nails into a broken picture frame, or carefully measured and cut a piece of wood to replace a broken rocker on a doll cradle, or used sharp-smelling glue to repair sandals that had been broken. When I was 9, my parents had a falling out with some longtime friends. We were on vacation with their family, and all of a sudden, my parents were telling me to get into the car, that we were packing up and driving home from Tahoe. I couldn't understand. When I'd had arguments with the kids in the family, we were always told to talk to each other, to work it out. Why weren't the grown-ups talking? Why couldn't my father fix this?
Or that. Little one. Many, perhaps all of us, have experienced some period of time when our lives were not what we wanted. We lost a job, maybe, or a friend, or a partner, or our health, or our faith. Our hearts broken, wondering how on earth we could go on, or how to pick up the pieces and start again. And many of us, perhaps all of us sitting or standing here, have been changed, stronger, maybe even wiser from facing whatever happened, doing the healing work of putting the pieces back together again, or simply surviving the passage of time. And we are more or less still whole, even though we might have the scars to show for the hard times, even when we may still feel somewhat devastated. Singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, in his song Anthem, sings, "Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." I'm so sorry, little one. Do any of you like to help others? Yeah, us too. It'd feel good, right, to be able to do something that provides some ease, some comfort, some assistance to care for someone. And we don't think that other people have to be perfect all the time, usually, right? Do any of you have a hard time asking for help? Yeah. Sometimes us too. Why? Why do we deny someone else the opportunity to feel good for helping, for supporting? We like that feeling, but we deny it to others sometimes, and I sometimes wonder why. I think it might have something to do with perfection and vulnerability. And because we aren't perfect, sorry if that's news to anybody, because we aren't perfect, we can feel maybe embarrassed or some shame. But Brené Brown, an expert in shame research, reminds us that vulnerability is our most accurate measurement of courage. So when we feel vulnerable and we ask for support or ask for help once in a while, we are actually being courageous. We are admitting that we are not perfect. And yet sometimes shame rushes in. Shame can rush in a lot when we feel vulnerable. But we could feel courageous. Why don't we? Brené Brown says, Jungian analysts call shame the swampland of the soul. She invites us to lean into the places that are hard. She says, we've heard the most compelling call ever to have a conversation in this country, and I think globally, around race. We cannot have that conversation without shame, because you cannot talk about race without talking about privilege. And when people start talking about privilege, they get frozen by shame sometimes. For the past couple of weeks, there has been another attempt to have this conversation, instigated by religious leaders of color in our Unitarian Universalist movement. For those of you that haven't heard about it, you can learn more online or on the Black Lives UU website, or you can be speaking with us this week, or I'm sure the work of the Social Action Team on Race will be sharing more resources and information over the coming weeks. But just know that today and next Sunday, you've come to church at an auspicious time. Over 600 UU congregations have committed to participate in a teach-in on white supremacy culture. Now, I feel a little vulnerable talking about something that is so profoundly important to me, such an integral part of my call to ministry. And it's a little hard to talk about. I mean, we just met. But we have to talk about it.
Do some of you feel really uncomfortable with that phrase, white supremacy culture? Yeah. It's okay if you do or not. It just means that there's something there for us all to explore. Reverend Sophia Betancourt, interim co-president for our Unitarian Universalist Association, stated, "Whatever your reaction is to the words white supremacy, it's a fair reaction. It's real. It's part of the journey." She reminds us that we're not saying there is inherent evil in Unitarian Universalism at all. We are saying there is a desperate need for the kind of beloved community work that we offer the world, and we want to do that work better. Yes? One of the goals of the teach-in is to help us understand the difference between white supremacy culture and white supremacists. Anna Kiegler, in an article in the Huffington Post, helps us disambiguate the words, making their meaning quite clear. She says, "White supremacy is a system that prioritizes whiteness regardless of the presence or absence of racial hatred. But a white supremacist is a person who embraces overt racial hatred. It's like a spectrum. By default, all white people are on the spectrum of complicity in upholding a system of white supremacy. But we only give the negative label of white supremacist to the really hateful people at the far end. Tima Okun of DismantlingRacism.org shares a list of characteristics of white supremacy culture that show up in our organizations. Culture is powerful. It is powerful precisely because it is so present and at the same time so very difficult to name and identify. The characteristics listed are damaging because they are used as norms and standards without being proactively named or chosen by the group. Tima doesn't say it, but I will. It's the water that we're swimming in. The stuff we don't even know. It's just how we do things. Because we all live in a white supremacy culture, these characteristics show up in the attitudes and behaviors of all of us, people of color and white people. Perfectionism is the first characteristic listed. In her research, Brené Brown connects perfectionism to shame. In her book, Daring Greatly, she says, "I found that most of us fall somewhere on a perfectionist continuum. In other words, when it comes to hiding our flaws, managing perceptions, and wanting to win over folks, we're all hustling a little. For some folks, perfectionism may only emerge when they're feeling particularly vulnerable. For others, perfectionism is compulsive, chronic, and debilitating. It looks and feels like an addiction. Regardless of where we each are on this continuum, if we want freedom from perfectionism, we have to make the journey from what will people think to I am enough. You want to try that one on? I am enough. That journey begins with shame resilience, self-compassion, and owning our own stories. To claim the truths of who we are, where we came from, what we believe, and the very imperfect nature of our lives, we have to be willing to give ourselves a break and appreciate the beauty of our cracks and imperfections, to be kinder and gentler with ourselves and each other. That's what living in the arena looks like. You could just be a spectator and critique others who are willing to be in the arena, who are growing and learning and risking, who are striving to live wholeheartedly. Today, for this denomination-wide teach-in, we're being invited into the arena, the place of courage in our vulnerability, with our perfectly imperfect selves.
Perfectionism is not the same as striving for excellence. Shifting from focusing on what others think is an interruption of white supremacy culture. We are enough. And we still have so much more to learn. Both are true. We don't have to be perfect. We can strive for excellence in much of what we do and then let some things be good enough. But our sense of self is strengthened when we explore where we are on the continuum and make strides to learn how to ask for help in healthy ways. As Unitarian Universalists, whose first principle is to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, it is imperative that we be willing to be uncomfortable and imperfect, explorers and healers of the racial and class divides that permeate our congregations, our communities, and our world. We're all learning together. We all will make mistakes. Doesn't our religious tradition call us to figure out how to love one another in our differences? Yes. Through the discomfort, through the fear. Writer, womanist, and civil rights activist Audre Lorde says, "When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid." When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. Courage, my friends, courage. A little over a year ago, I made a commitment to take better care of my body. That's why there are weights up there, though I don't know if I could lift them. I started working out with an online coach. Recently, while the story was unfolding about the hiring practices and the influence of white supremacy culture at the Unitarian Universalist Association, I heard the coach's words differently. He says, "If you want to change, you've got to challenge yourself." Year two. He says, after a particularly hard exercise, things like, we're going to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Most of us prefer comfort. Comfort is often linked to privilege. And so getting clear, pulling apart, asking questions, getting curious, being willing to risk authentic connection. Our faith is calling us to do this. What a gift. What a blessing. Getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. May we have the courage to love one another through these challenges and changes. May we have the courage we need to heal what is broken in this beautiful and hurting world. May we give thanks for the imperfections that allow the light to shine through. And may we give hope as we draw the circle wide until there is no other. There's just us. Salam. Shalom.
Ashe. Aho. Namaste. Amen. And blessed be. When we draw our circle wide, we do well to be open to change. For if we're unwilling to create new ways, then we are destined to keep our circles small and not truly welcoming the diversities of identities, theologies, and perspectives. Our lives are so much richer for being truly open, living in the arena of courage.